This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Time. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You've probably heard a lot about how distance learning is transforming education. College students take some of their courses while they're in pajamas in their dorm rooms. And virtual high schools exist virtually around Wisconsin, attracting kids who are otherwise left behind by the traditional classroom. But another aspect of virtual education is gaining a foothold as big-name universities extend their brand. Massive open online courses, or MOOCs, allow hundreds or thousands of students to take courses from leading schools around the world, though not typically with an aim towards a traditional college degree. Earlier this month, the Greater Milwaukee Committee brought together several university presidents from the area to discuss the future of MOOCs with national expert Chris Westfall. Westfall joined us in the studio as well. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you, Mitch. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is it about education and society today, at this point in time, that makes the time right for MOOCs in your eyes?
Well, the idea of time is very interesting. If you take people from different professions, if you had a time machine and you could bring people from 100 years ago, if you could bring a police officer from 1913 into this century, that individual would be completely mystified as to how to do his or her job in the current era. But if you were to bring a professor of Renaissance history to 2013, that individual will be perfectly comfortable in the modern classroom. Of course, there will be some technologies and things that will be a mystery, but essentially the way that education has been delivered, particularly higher education in this country for more than 100 years, there's been no change. And MOOCs, or massive open online courses, represent a tectonic shift in the way that people access education. MOOCs are located at the intersection of commerce, in other words, what businesses expect, what students expect, and what colleges, or at least some colleges, are able to deliver.
Paint a picture of how MOOCs are working. This is still fairly early in the era of MOOCs. What do they look like today, and where do you see them going?
Well, first, to define what a MOOC is, a massive open online course is designed to offer free access to a large student population to a particular skill. And MOOCs actually started in 2011 when Stanford University decided to offer an online course into artificial intelligence. And 160,000 people signed up for the course. So that's where we are right now in terms of what it means is this accessibility. And 23,000 people actually completed that course. So it's given rise to a number of organizations now that offer these online courses. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but well, that's sort of a background for
– And there are key – I mean, distance learning, sort of traditional distance learning, has been around for a long time. There are some key differences between a massive open online course and what we think of as traditional distance learning.
Well, there are several, but the key difference is flipping the classroom. In a traditional model, the classroom represents the place for the sage on the stage, if you will, the lecture hall for the professor to share their knowledge. MOOCs flip the classroom in that the lecture is recorded. The lecture is watched and viewed as homework. So what actually happens in the online course is delivered in a shorter format and focuses on greater activity for the students. So it's really an opportunity for one-on-one work for the actual problem solving to take place. So in that regard, the classroom is flipped. So what we think of as homework has changed. So has what we think of as being in the traditional classroom. And in fact, if you want to know what the traditional classroom is going to look like in the world of MOOCs, you hold it in your hands and it has a flat screen on it and you type on a digital keyboard. That's the world that we're moving to, and that's the way that students want to access knowledge.
Well, how is that one-on-one activity working? Because presumably the university or the college that's offering the course and the person who's really running it isn't going to sit there and grade 130,000 papers.
What's so exciting about MOOCs is that they harness the power of social and they create an opportunity for students to help students. So there is, as you can imagine, in a group of 160,000, there is an opportunity to create subgroups, study groups, an opportunity to create questions and answers, you know, because students are going to have similar questions. So MOOCs really are about, again, using technology in more meaningful, more compelling ways to take advantage of some of the things that we see in social, like that, for example, like Facebook groups, but turning that into a platform that helps students to help themselves in a spirit of sharing, which is also behind the whole initiative for MOOCs.
What about quality control? Without, a bricks and mortar advisor there to guide your MOOC education, how are the right would-be students connecting with the right classes?
Well, quite frankly, Mitch, the jury's still out on that. And one of the challenges that MOOCs face is not only in quality control but also cheating. Cheating has been a real problem in the coursework. But there are some things that can be designed into the courses to help. For example, some of the organizations that are offering MOOCs, such as Coursera, Udacity, and others, have online tools to track where students are stumbling. So not only are they able to know where perhaps in a video or in a lesson or in a quiz there are challenges that keep coming up over and over again and actually tweak and adjust their teaching to make it more effective, but they have an opportunity to know in no uncertain terms where students are struggling and provide feedback for things like and even rewards for things like persistence. Because if I turn in an assignment on a math problem, for example, you don't know how many times I tried to solve that problem before I got to the answer I came up with. But if I'm doing that online, guess what? You do. And you can see my challenges in new and more meaningful ways. So it is true that it's difficult for one teacher to address the needs of 10,000 or 100,000 students. But by using these online tools and by using technology, when any media platform gets translated through the internet, it changes. And so that's part of the challenge that we're seeing now for MOOCs is what is that change going to look like and how can we use technology in a more meaningful way so that there can be quality control, there can be standards. And another way that they can inject quality control in there is by offering certifications, in other words, for competency. I mean, it's one thing to take a course, but it's quite another to be able to prove that you can speak Spanish, for example. There needs to be some sort of testing element to prove competency as well.
And so the next step perhaps is the bottom line. What are they getting out of it? Is the idea to have a certified skill set that comes out of it or simply to broaden their education?
I think it's both. But the certified skill set is really the thing that is compelling, at least on the student side. And it creates some challenges for traditional universities as they look at themselves, I believe, as an institution, as they should, not a trade school. So if they are producing MOOCs that provide skills, how do we make sure that we're, as a university, providing critical thinking skills, not just capabilities and sort of trade school sort of things? Not that there's anything wrong with that. But for traditional universities, it can be a challenge. The key is to provide competency, some sort of certification. And we have certifications out there. If you're going to be a lawyer, you have to take the bar exam. A CPA, there are certifications that you have to have. What about similar standards for courses in marketing or nursing, for example? And those certifications, those standards have to be in place in order for MOOCs to be effective. And you ask about the bottom line too. And those certifications are really a place or an opportunity for the revenue model behind MOOCs to take place because, as you remember, MOOCs are a free platform. That's how they're designed. It's, you know, come one, come all. But when it comes time for the certification, that's where there can be charges. And again, there are different business models, and I'm not trying to say that this is a one-size-fits-all because MOOCs are about specificity and creating a specific curriculum for specific needs. But in general, the certification opportunity. And when you're an organization like Khan Academy that has over 4 million users, you know, if they charge even $10 for a certification and only 25% of their student population takes advantage of that, that's still a very, very large number.
And so without certification being a standard part of the equation yet, what are the colleges and universities and other institutions that are offering these courses getting from it? How much of it right now is about brand building?
Brand building is really key, and there are universities right here like the University of Wisconsin-Madison that is offering and exploring what it means to provide these programs and other schools in the area as well. So what we're seeing from the thought leaders at Harvard, MIT, Stanford, some of the leaders in this space who dip their toe into the water first is that they view it, I believe, as an opportunity to really establish themselves as the arbiter of knowledge at the top tier level. So it's an opportunity that exists as well for other schools here in Wisconsin and across the country to provide that same sort of thought leadership. And that thought leadership is really what students, I believe, are looking for. I mean, ultimately, there's no replacement for the experience of being on campus, going to football games, going to parties, you know, those kinds of things. But for students and also for the parents who are paying for the students to go to a traditional college experience. Ultimately, the goal is, what is the credential? What is the capability? What do you have that you didn't have before in terms of critical thinking that can translate into a meaningful contribution in terms of a salary or starting your own business or whatever your goals may be?
And so if the idea isn't necessarily that MOOCs are going to supplant the bricks and mortar education, is it more likely that the people that are going to be pursuing opportunities through these massive open online courses will already have a higher education in their background?
Perhaps. What's changing for the university environment is this concept of lifelong learning. I mean, the idea that a college sophomore is 20 years old is yesterday's news. I mean, that individual could be a 37-year-old mother of two. It could be a 14-year-old prodigy. Who knows? But the market is asking for the ability to access the benefits of a Marquette education, for example, a powerful brand, but to be able to access that from La Crosse or Two Rivers or some other city where you don't necessarily have to be on campus. And what about for the working professional that would like to study and work on problems at 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon? That's the viability and that's the expansiveness that MOOCs can offer. It can't replace the college experience, but what the college experience is changing.
Have you taken a MOOC?
Interestingly enough, I have created a course. I've dipped my toe into the water. I have created a course on a platform called Udemy, udemy.com, and it's a course designed to help you to communicate and pitch a business idea. As an elevator pitch guy, imagine that. I have a course to help you to pitch more effectively, and it's something that I've created with Jeffrey Hazlett, who is a contributing editor on Bloomberg TV, and he's also the host of the C-Suite with Jeffrey Hazlett. So we've combined our resources and created about 110 minutes of video, live video instruction, as well as interactive quizzes that are available on udemy.com. It's a pay-to-play platform, so it's not a MOOC in the traditional or pure definition of it. But what a MOOC really is remains to be seen. But our platform targets really a business audience and people who are looking to – they have an idea that they want to pitch more effectively, and that's what this online course is designed to do. And again, it's just been out for a little over a month, so we're just dipping our toe into the water.
And I would imagine, like anything that really takes advantage of the internet, this entire model could look completely different 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
It's impossible to predict what this model is going to become. In fact, I was talking with someone who I really respect and maybe the listeners need to know about, a guy by the name of Jose Bowen. Jose Bowen is the author of a book called Teaching Naked, and he's the dean of the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. And he's a friend of mine. And I called him and I said, you know, Jose, what course can't be taught on a MOOC? Can you learn to play the violin, or can you learn to diagnose pleurisy, or can you learn how to draw blood effectively from a massive online course? What can't you learn? And he said, quite frankly, I don't know, and neither does the marketplace. And really what this whole educational initiative means, and it means to the people listening and to the schools here in the Milwaukee area and the state of Wisconsin and beyond, you have to ask yourself, how will you help to define what MOOCs mean? And educators for years have served as curators of content, meaning that as a college professor, you don't necessarily create everything that the students absorb, even if you've written the textbook. You refer them to resources and that sort of thing. And so as content creators move into content curators, it's education's job to point people in the right direction and to have access to those resources. And the world-class resources define the world-class university, define the world-class education, and MOOCs are yet another resource that people can tap into and provide the kind of accessibility that fits students at all points in their lifetime and at all points in their career. So for me, the way that I view MOOCs and these new technological initiatives is as a very expansive platform and as an inclusive platform. Figuring out how to monetize it, figuring out how to produce it, because obviously, you know, it's one thing to create an hour-long lecture. It's quite another to create an hour of video, interactive quizzes, tracking mouse clicks, et cetera. And there are platforms to help to do that. But those are the puzzles that are being solved every day and that I think anyone who wants to play in this space and any university who's going to participate, and many of them here in Wisconsin already are, they have to continue to solve those problems and ask themselves, how will we be a part of this?
Chris Westfall, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mitch. It's a pleasure.
Chris Westfall is a national expert on massive open online courses, or MOOCs, and also holds the distinction of being National Elevator Pitch Champion. He was in Milwaukee recently to talk with area university leaders about MOOCs in an event convened by the Greater Milwaukee Committee. We'll take stock of the state of the bicycle universe, or at least this corner of it, when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.